The Remarkable People Podcast. Check it out. The Remarkable People Podcast. Listen, do, repeat. For life.
Hello, friends. I'm David Pasqualone, and welcome to this week's remarkable episode of the Remarkable People Podcast, The Becca Ribbing Story. In this episode, we talk about the differences in generations, how her parents were hippies, but yet her grandfather was part of the Gold Watch generation, how she moved all the time and learned to not only meet people, but to enjoy and love hearing their stories, how she found how she identified her strengths, found her passion and voice, and is helping other people like you and I do it today. So she wrote this great book, The Clarity Journal. The Clarity Journal I've been personally going through, and I'm really enjoying it. It's simple, it's encouraging, it's easy to follow, a lot of daily exercises, but they're short and sweet and concise. So in this episode, she's going to talk about identifying our strengths and then taking that clarity, putting momentum behind it, and letting us fulfill our life purpose. So enjoy this episode. Share it with your friends. Please give us a 5-star review with the pod host player or the YouTube link you watch. And if there's anything we did that you think could be better or why you can't give us a 5-star review, please let us know so we can make it better. So at this time, you're going to hear Becca, a professional coach, a woman who has helped hundreds of people find their purpose and fulfill it, and just a great person. You're going to really enjoy this episode. So I'm David Pasqualone. This is Becca Ribbing, and we can't wait to hear from you. Enjoy the episode. Hey, Becca, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, we just gave you the intro. We talked about Becca, so you know a little bit of what to expect. So Becca, at this time, we're going to go through the past, the present, and the future of your life. If you can just share with us from literally, where did you grow up? What was your childhood like? Whatever you think was formidable in making you the woman you are today.
Oh man. So I grew up all over the place. And when I say that to people, oftentimes they ask if I was a military brat. And I was pretty much the exact opposite of a military brat. My parents were kind of wannabe hippies and we just moved around a lot. And so I think that one of the things that helped me do is like really jump in and make friends wherever I go, you know, because when you have to do it over and over again, you kind of develop that skill. I think that the biggest, most formative memory I have from my childhood is when I was about 12 years old and I was talking to my grandfather. He had just picked me up from a friend's house on his way home from work. And I was just, you know, bubbly 12 years old, like, hey, how was your day? And he was like, oh, it was awful. I was like, why? And he launched into how horrible his job was, how much he didn't like it. You know, and this is a man just a couple years away from retirement. And I, being the naive, optimistic 12-year-old, was like, okay, but why don't you just get another job? And my grandfather, who was born in 1928, I think, was like, that's not how it works. You get one job, you stay in it until you retire, and then you can be happy. And I think that that was just such a formative moment for me because I really knew at that moment that that was not going to work for me, that I wouldn't be able to do that. And it's so funny because it's like, you know, those formative moments that you don't even realize in the moment that that's going to stay with you forever. You know, at 12, you don't have this like grand vision of where you're going to go. But that conversation has come up so many times in my life in different ways. Like someone telling me how they don't like their job and me being like, okay, let's work on getting you a different one. And then being like, no, I'm stuck. I can't do anything different. And I think it's my mission in life to get people out of those ruts.
That's a good mission because a lot of people are in that rut. And it's like saying I have a pebble in my shoe. It's killing my foot and nobody takes their shoe off, you know?
Exactly. And another like funny little way of thinking about it, it's like you have spinach in your teeth and no one tells you, hey, you should get that out of your teeth. Like, I think a lot of times people will kvetch and no one's just going to be like, hey, this job isn't working for you. You need a different one. Like, move on. And I think that's really important to like have it be really normalized that our happiness is worth a lot. And that, while yes, you should be also persistent and, you know, not necessarily quit at the first sign of struggle all the time. On the flip side, if you constantly are staying in situations longer than you should or longer than are healthy for you, that it's okay to prioritize yourself and move on.
100%. And I swear this is a conversation I just had with my 17-year-old daughter. She's got two jobs. She's working like crazy. I'm so proud of her while she goes to college full time. And she's miserable, not miserable, but it's not a healthy atmosphere. So I'm like, Why are you staying? She's like, because I want money. And I'm like, okay, you want money, but you don't need money. I'm glad you recognize that. But now let's move on, put together a plan. Let's not be irresponsible. And she's got an interview today and she's probably going to get a great job, kill two jobs with one great job. So it's exactly what you just said. She should have met you 6 months ago.
Right. And I think that especially now, it's so funny because like I have people who, you know, call me and 3 weeks later, they have a job. Like the job market is just so fast that it's like, there is no excuse right now. Just go for it. You probably are going to get better pay. You're probably going to get better hours. And I don't know. I had one person who, through no fault of her own, she was going to the first day of her job and she ran into construction. And so she was like really late on the first day of her job. You know, in normal times, that would have meant that they would have just said, hey, you know what? This isn't going to be a good fit. They were so thrilled to see her. They were afraid that she had just decided to ghost them. You know, it's like, I feel like it's been a really interesting time because I think that at a certain level, we can be more human in our jobs and like our flaws are more accepted and that we can really like actually take control of what we want, but also really take control of the environment we want as well.
Yeah. And I will say, giving your grandpa some support here, his generation versus your parents and our generation, and then our children's generation, it is a completely different mentality for the work environment. And you mentioned something interesting. So your dad had the hardcore, I mean, your grandfather had the hardcore old school mentality. This is my job. You know, the good old watch days, you retire after 25, 50 years, you get the gold watch, and then you kind of die in your house. You know, it wasn't very a happy existence, right? But then you said your parents were kind of hippies. So was right. How did that happen? How did that transition happen? Just the day and age, or was there some kind of catalyst in your family?
Oh, you know, I've never even thought of that. So it was my mom's dad and my dad's dad, I never actually even met. I'm assuming he was very similar, but he passed away a couple of years before I was born. So I had never got the pleasure of meeting him. And I mean, I'm sure that there was a great deal of that's not going to work for me either. But I think that also the baby boomers had a little less direction, like some of them. I think that we often talk about the boomers and like, you know, people who are hippies or whatnot as a monolith, but a lot of them did find one job, stay with it for quite a long time, or one industry and move within that industry. And I don't know. I want to get off the podcast and go call my mom and be like, so how much did that influence you?
And you can do that. Hey, we're here to help each other, right? Learn more about ourselves and our families and just be better people. So, okay. Now growing up though, with your parents, however they got there, they had that hippie mentality. You said moving around, just kind of going with the flow of life. How did that influence you to who you are today?
I think it made me more open-minded. I think the places that we usually landed were fairly liberal, fairly, and not necessarily liberal politically, but like educationally. We always landed in places where like highly educated populations. My dad was in technology. So I think that that was one of the reasons why it was easy to move around from place to place, because you could always find a job. It was, I think, just really broadening, you know, when you meet people, like when you move from Chicago and then you move to Virginia, and Virginia back then, like if you go to Virginia now, it doesn't feel like the South. When I moved to Virginia, when I was a kid, it felt like the South. Like all my teachers said, y'all, my fifth grade teacher was African-American and she grew up under segregation. She went like, it was just kind of very different people that I was meeting each time I'd move. And I think that that maybe that made me really like, I am super curious about everyone's story. Every time I meet someone, it just comes naturally to me. I end up hearing everything about their story and I tend to remember it. I may not remember their name. My husband calls it my party trick, because I can go meet someone at a party and 5 years later, I'll meet them again and I won't remember their name, but I'll remember that they had just lost their dad and their kid was really into soccer or whatever the interesting parts of the story that they told me were. I'll remember those.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've met people like that before, and I'm kind of on that plane. It's weird. You really care about people. You really love people, but the name's not as important as who they are. But to like Dale Carnegie says, the sweetest name to somebody's ears is their own though. Right.
Right.
So we got to connect both. We got to connect both. So, okay. So now you're growing up, you're moving around, you're getting to experience, like you said, you love to meet people and talk and hear their story. So between birth and let's say high school, is there anything significant happened that formed you that you want to talk about? Or do you want to move into college and early career?
So I think one thing that happened, one other formative thing is when I was 12, I was living up in New Jersey and it was over the summer again. And I guess it might've been the same summer. Actually, I went to go visit my grandparents in Chicago. Now I'm thinking about it, maybe I was 13. But this girl came to visit her aunt and she was from California and she was long blonde hair. She looked right out of your typical movie from California. She talked like a Valley girl. She was the coolest thing ever. And I spent all like the 2 weeks of her visit talking to her constantly. We just would sit around and gab. At one day, she was telling me about how a Buddhist monk came to her school and taught them how to meditate. And I found that really fascinating because really all she said was, you know, you sit down cross-legged and you visualize your breath going in and you visualize the breath going out. That's about the instruction level I had. But I was a big old geek at the time, wanted to be like Luke Skywalker and Yoda. I was like, I'm going to try this. And so I started meditating, you know, in eighth grade, and I was pretty consistent with it throughout eighth grade and high school. And, you know, I started getting into boys, there would be months where I was really obsessed with a boy and I'd get out of it again. But I always kind of came back to it.
And let me ask you, what was it? Did you at that? I didn't mean to cut you off. There's a lag in our conversation. I apologize. But at that age, did you actually find value in it or was it just cool to do?
I totally found value in it. And I think why I found value in it is because I was learning from another kid. I often will tell people that, you know, if they've had an experience with meditation that they didn't like, you know, a lot of times when we go to a meditation class, it's a 3-hour intro class to meditation, and you're going to sit cross-legged for 45 minutes and you get bored. And learning from a kid, like I had very short instructions. It wasn't a 300-page book. It was a 5-minute conversation. And it was super actionable and there was no judgment about it. It's not like she told me, and you have to do this for 25 minutes or you have to do this for an hour in order, like you, there was no, in order to be effective, you need to do it this way. It was just lighthearted and light spirited. And I think that every time I talk to someone about meditation, when they say it doesn't work for them, like try doing it like a kid, because when you do it like a kid, that's actually kind of more the spirit, I think, of meditation, because it really helps you like get out of your own mind. But if you're in your own mind thinking about the rules, as opposed to just being in your own mind and letting yourself kind of flow, it's two totally different things. And being in your own mind, listening to other people's rules, rarely makes anyone happy.
Yeah. And we've had multiple guests, you know, this is the Remarkable People podcast, or they're high achievers. And I've had so many people in my life, but just guests on the show say how they meditate. Now, all different forms of meditation, even some different definitions of what that is. But like the two I really, really, there was like George Hoffman. He has bipolar and manic depression. He hasn't had an outbreak in 30 years. And he has a biblical meditation process that he goes through. And, you know, I'll put the link in the notes if anybody wants to hear that. And then also Nate Rifkin, he's got a book on the standing meditation. They're both saying a lot of the same things you're saying, but this is something maybe we can help people understand. Meditation doesn't mean and like you're sitting there clearing your mind and you just picture a white or black background. Explain, it's really just focusing, you know, kind of clearing your mind, but thoughts will always come in. So explain to the people listening who are like, oh, I hate this. I hate these conversations. It's a bunch of voodoo. But explain to them what meditation really is and how it helps.
So I think that actually the biggest problem is we so focus on clearing our mind that we miss the first step. The first step is actually to notice everything that's going on.
Yes.
And you
notice around you.
And you can't let it go until you notice it and allow it. And I think that us as Americans, pretty much most of the English speaking countries that I've worked with, we are so focused on the end goal. We are so focused on achieving that we really lose sight of the process. And we also really lose sight of our own feelings. And so when I talk about meditation, often I spend a lot of time talking about mindfulness, because to me, the really wonderful thing about meditation is that it helps you access mindfulness, but there are a lot of other ways that you can access mindfulness as well. And it's just so important. Your whole body, your mind, your physiology, everything about you is trying to give you messages about what's working for you, what's not working for you, you know, what brings you joy, what needs to change. And we get so focused on pushing through that we lose sight of those messages and that we ignore them. And so I think to me, the miraculous thing about meditation in general is that it gets you back in touch with yourself. It clears out the distractions and it kind of gives you something to do. It's so funny. I remember hearing this years and years and years ago. But when people stop smoking, they used to be told to find something else to fidget with in their hand. You know, a lot of times they'd have a toothpick. I used to notice that. And just the physical grounding, because you're used to having something in your hand. Well, we all have addictions to our cell phones. We all have something in our hands 24/7 if we want it. And I think that when you actually sit down cross-legged and have your hands in a certain position, it does help you really ground in without that phone. Because I mean, I hate to sound trite, and you know, a lot of people talk about cell phone addiction, and I certainly have one. I'm not going to say that I'm beyond that. But when you think back to 20 years ago, we used to have a lot of time where we'd sit and think without anything else to do. You know, we'd sit at the subway station, or we'd sit waiting for the bus, or we'd sit even just in line at the grocery store. And now we just never have to do that. But some of our best inspiration comes when we're just sitting with ourselves.
I couldn't agree more. And even just the processing of so many things happen so fast during the day, and our mind needs time to process that and kind of, okay, this goes in this bin, this goes in this bin. Let's toss that, you know, if we could. But yeah, I agree with you. It's a between television, radio, podcast. Now listen to your podcast. No, I'm just kidding. But there's so many just outlets out there and we're just fire hose flooded and we're busy all the time, mostly with stuff that doesn't matter, that I agree with you completely. Now you throw a cell phone in our hand and the seconds we're in line at the grocery store, like you said, we're stopped at a light. Somebody's on the toilet. That always drove me crazy. But they're on their cell phone, right? Me too. I've really backed off this last year, but it's like you said, it's an absolute addiction. It keeps us from processing what we need to. So acknowledging this and seeing this in your life, you use the meditation in the mornings and the evenings. When do you use meditation to balance out life?
You know, I still basically do what I started doing many, many years ago. I do it when I need it. You know, I think that one of the things that doing it fairly habitually, it gives you insight to when you actually need it. And it allows you to be more mindful about when you are getting stressed out. But I am not religious about my practice. I am very flowy. And whenever I need it, that's when I use it.
Awesome. So now you learn this practice, you go through high school, you go into college. Where does your life go there, Becca, from college forward?
Oh,
or maybe, well, you didn't even go to college. I think.
No, I did go to college.
Yeah, we had a previous talk. I don't want to sound assumptive here, but we already had a previous talk. But from that point forward, go with your life.
You know, so you get out of college, and I think most people do this. You get your first job and you think you know everything. You're in your like mid-20s and you're really assuming that you know what you're going to do and where you're going to go. And then the world's like, ha ha, school is nothing like the real world. And what you think you wanted, maybe you didn't want as much as you really thought you did, or maybe you get pigeonholed. For me, it was that the thing I thought I wanted, it just wasn't as interesting or fulfilling for me. And so I started job searching, and the jobs I was getting callbacks for, I wasn't actually that interested in. I was really having a hard time finding what I wanted next because I'd spent so much time focused on one path. And as I was going through that, I started doing a ton of reading, a ton of what color is your parachute, doing the Myers-Briggs test, really trying to figure myself out. And at the same time, all of my friends were going through that exact same thing. They, you know, got their first job, wasn't what they wanted, or they couldn't figure out how to get out of being an admin assistant into something a little more interesting. And I started helping all of them get better jobs. And, you know, by the time maybe my fourth friend got a better job, I realized I am pretty good at this and I really enjoy it. You know, it gives me exactly what I like doing. Like, I like talking to people and hearing their stories and then helping them figure out how they can be more authentic to themselves and also use their strengths. And so I ended up deciding to become a coach. And this was back before coaching was a huge thing, but it's been really lovely because I think at a very real level, seeing everybody else go through this process has helped me as well, because being able to see other people's process, being able to see the messiness, it just gives me more insight into how even people that are really successful have that messiness. And that when we judge ourselves based off of someone else, we're only judging ourselves based off of their story, their persona. We're not actually understanding went in the hard work that went into where they are, or the luck that went into where they are, or the perseverance and when they pushed through.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. And there's people who every day struggle with dissatisfaction. They look at other people and like, oh, look at that great life. But you never know what's going on behind closed doors. And a lot of people are miserable because money doesn't matter, you know, stuff doesn't matter. You have even, you know, surface relationships don't matter. But if you have all that, but you don't have the family to come home to at night, There's a lot of depressed, sad people, empty people. Yeah. You need God and you need others. God and the neighbor. Number one and two commandments, right? Love thy Lord, thy God, and love thy neighbor as thyself. So, well, yeah. Go.
Sorry. I was going to say, and you also need to have like that, because I know people with family that are depressed, you know,
I'm saying a healthy family, healthy, balanced family.
Well, I know people with healthy, balanced families that really do still struggle with depression because they are so focused on judging themselves based off of other people. I find it most in high achievers. You know, maybe they had a really lovely mom and dad. Maybe they have a lovely wife, but all these people were type B and they were type A, and they really struggle because they see all these people being successful and they don't know how to get there. And it's just such a waste at a very real level, because you're actually not going to get there if you're not happy. And even if you did get the success, if you're not happy, it's not actually going to be fulfilling. You're just going to be looking for the next thing that you want to do. There was a really interesting quote in why am I forgetting his name? The guy who wrote Dilbert. It'll come to me, but Scott Adams.
I can, see the signature, but I can't remember the name.
Right. He was talking about how, you know, when you have goals and you're really goal oriented, you're working, and then you achieve the goal. And it's like kind of a letdown. It's like that happiness only lasts for a couple minutes, for just a little bit of time. And then you're like off to find your next goal, working, and not happy. And I think that some people fall into that trap where they're just always striving for more without seeing where they are.
I couldn't agree more. And people who listen to our podcast regularly, I think midlife crises for guys and girls, that's what happens. I mean, in America, we're in over 80 countries, but especially in America, you're born at 4 years old, you start going to school, you're pushed into this ridiculous broken system where you're there from the morning till night. Then you come home with homework. So they're teaching you to be workaholics and inefficient. Then you go through all that school, you got to go to college or get a trade right away. Then from there, you start having family, you get in debt with a house and expenses and vehicles. And then by the time you slow down and catch up, you're 40 years old and nobody knows what the hell just happened. Where did my life go? Is this even what I want? So I think exactly what you're saying is spot on. It's just busyness that gets out of the way of life, gets in the way of life.
Well, and I think that also when you were talking about school, I think another way school plays into this is that in school, if you did well in one subject and poorly in another subject, you'd end up getting the compliment sandwich, right? You'd get, you did really well in this, but we really need you to work harder here. And instead of really just validating and praising and celebrating your strengths, you are constantly taught to look at your weaknesses, feel bad about your weaknesses, to feel like you could push through your weaknesses. And I think that also makes people unhappy because they don't have that sense of balance. Like, it's okay that I'm not good at math. I am actually good at math, but if someone wasn't good at math, like, it's okay. Like, really, all you need is like the beginning of algebra. You can easily get through adult life, assuming you're not a rocket scientist or a physicist, with like the first semester of algebra. And it doesn't matter. And all these things that everyone acts like matter so much as a kid, they don't. It doesn't matter if you weren't good at remembering dates. Who cares when the War of 1812 was? You know, it's good to know the themes. Like, I'm not saying that education is worthless. Like, I think that it's really good to be exposed to the themes, to understand the themes, to know how to research when you come up against a question that you can't answer yourself. But so much of how we try to train kids to drive themselves is through shame or through like kind of that nagging pushing. And that doesn't really teach them how to be self-motivated.
Yeah, I agree completely. And it screws up their priorities. It screws up their whole image of themselves and what they're supposed to be. And I mean, I don't want to say, obviously not all, I don't even want to say the majority, but I think the majority of people I do know that are really hyper successful achievers, they weren't good students. They really weren't good students, but they were good learners. They were good at life, but they're not going, you know, music class, ta, ta, ti, ti, ta. Their brain wasn't wired for that, right? But what their brain was good for was people or business or, I mean, electronics. It's just a beautiful thing. So now you're learning all this and you're seeing all this and you're helping your friends get careers that were better. So did that help you really settle in your foundation? This is where I belong? Or did you struggle with you're helping other people and it's hard to help yourself?
So I think that when I talk about clarity, I often encourage people to look at 18-month to 3-year chunks, because anyone listening to this podcast is going to be growth oriented. Now, not everyone is growth oriented, but anyone that's listening to this is. And if you're growth oriented, you can't just create a goal that you're going to meet when you're 65 and be happy with that. Like, you're going to be constantly changing the path. That's why I really like talking about life path as opposed to life purpose, because I think sometimes when we think about life purpose and clarity, we're still back in that like 1950s mindset. Like, I am going to figure out what I'm going to do, and then I'm going to do it for the rest of my life. When that's just not even possible for someone who's growth mindset oriented, because you're going to be constantly changing. What you really need is a strong and solid embrace of your strengths, of your joys, of your loves, so that that way you're making each of those pivots from a place of strength where you're going to something that you like. So now, like, I've been a coach for 14 years and I've definitely not been static about it, because that would not have felt good. The times where I have kind of hit a goal and then not really had anything else I was working towards, actually they often don't feel good. You feel stuck. You're like, what should I do next? What am I doing? And I actually wrote the clarity journal when I was coming out of one of those phases. I had hit a kind of a really sticky point in my life. I got pregnant with my second kid and I had a really bad chiropractic adjustment like in my first trimester. And I was walking with a cane on and off throughout the whole pregnancy. Now, my first pregnancy, I was one of those glowing, annoying pregnant people that everyone complains about. I did yoga the day I delivered my son, you know.
Oh, man.
So the second one, it was very demoralizing. All of a sudden, I disabled half the time. And even when I'm not walking with a cane, it's still a real struggle. And then in the third trimester, my husband got a job, like his dream job. So we moved from Washington, D.C. to Seattle, Washington. And then poor little dude was born with chronic ear infections. So he was not a happy camper for the first year of his life. And the medicine wasn't really clearing him up. And it was miserable. So we all hit those periods of time in our life, right? We all hit those periods of time where things just aren't working. And when that happens, we have a tendency to just strip down to the bare minimum, just get through it, which is like self-protectionary, right? You're not gonna be able to like work on your dreams. You're not gonna be able to really be expansive when you're just underwater. But the funny thing that happens is when you're coming back out of that, like, sometimes the adrenaline was just pushing you through it, but when you're coming out of it, you don't recognize that what you really need now is to grow again. Like, what you really need now is to get back in touch with yourself. And so I was struggling with, what do I do? Like, I really had just been taking clients and hadn't been doing anything else. And a friend of mine laughed at me one day because I was talking for like 20th time. What should I be doing? What am I doing? This doesn't feel good. Like, should I even be coaching? And she laughed. She's like, well, you're a coach. What would you tell people if they were in this situation? And so I very quickly got off the phone with her. I was a little annoyed, but I went and wrote down every question I ask people. And as I was writing down all of these questions and then going back and answering for them for myself, I realized how powerful it is just to get out of your own head and really look at the problem in a different way. And so as I was doing this, I realized that the thing that I had given up while I was struggling with life was I'd really given up my writing. And my writing had been a big part of my business. And I had to let it go because I just didn't have time for it. And once I had that realization, it really helped me lay out the framework for my next steps and my next path. Because I'm still a coach and I still love coaching, but sometimes when you're feeling that sense of stuckness, you almost want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. It doesn't feel good and you don't really know why. And until you get real clarity, until you're able to look outside of yourself and see the whole situation for what it is, you don't necessarily make great decisions.
Yeah. And it makes you feel almost a little guilty when you're coaching people, when you're going through that. So it's a very hard balance because you really are qualified. You really do have the ability, but you feel like what's that term people use?
Fraud?
Yeah, no, fraud's the word, but there's a name for the psychological syndrome, but that's it. Yeah. You feel like imposter syndrome.
Right. Yes.
Imposter syndrome. Ah, I got it. All right. There we go. But I feel like that all the time. I'm like, I struggle with that. I don't know if you do too. Do you struggle with imposter syndrome?
I do on and off. It kind of depends on what's going on in my life because, if my life isn't going great, then I feel like imposter syndrome. It's like, who am I to help someone when things are going so badly in my own life? But what I help people on is clarity. And I think the thing that's really helped me since writing the Clarity Journal and really talking about this a lot is just recognizing that even experts have these struggles. Even experts, even the best coach, probably even Brené Brown, right? Have these cycles of needing to recognize when what they are doing isn't quite right anymore. And instead of just throwing them away, recognize it's just time for a pivot. It's okay. The past is fine. We can honor and love the past while still deciding that we're going to pivot and move forward in a stronger direction.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So now the Clarity Journal, if you guys are watching this, some people are watching the podcast, some people are listening to the podcast, but Becca was kind enough to send me a copy and I got through the beginning sections and I really like how you laid this out. What she does is she has a quick introduction. She doesn't belabor it. And then she gets right into gratitude. That's first lesson, gratitude. Write down everything you're grateful for. And that's really where we all need to start, right? And then she goes through these daily steps and assignments, but then she'll pause and put a little more introduction, a little more explanation. It's kind of like a guide. It's like being coached by Becca. So when you put together this curriculum, is this something that you wrote it how you like to learn, or is this from the experience you had with your clients, or a little of everything?
It's a little of everything. I think that actually, as I was writing it, I was coaching myself way more than I normally can. Because as I was writing it, I was really going through what I naturally do with my clients and being able to be more methodical about it. But I also think that in writing it, I really was able to have a great deal of compassion and channel a great deal of compassion, both for myself, but also for the people reading it. Because I think that when we get stuck, the thing that's hard is that, we are so good at giving advice to other people, or most of us are so good at giving advice to other people. But when we're trying to give advice to ourselves, it's too nuanced. There's too many excuses. There's too many little pieces of baggage that when we're giving advice to somebody else, it's easy to be like, oh, well, you need to ignore that baggage and just move forward. Whereas when we're doing it for ourselves, we really need to actually take in the baggage, see what is holding us back, and then move forward from there.
I think that's great advice. Now, We have listeners all over the world, but humans are humans. Doesn't matter what nation you're from. Doesn't matter your social class. Humans are humans. One race, a human race. But people are listening to you, and 70% of the global population has no idea what they want to do or what they're supposed to be when they grow up. So for the people listening, myself included, right? No, for everybody. What are the steps? You know, they got your book, but if you were to give them some just catalyst start steps, what are three steps just to get started in finding your purpose and that like focus?
I think it really starts with your strengths. And I find that people don't really embrace their strengths enough. And so when I say strengths, I am talking about things you are good at. I'm talking about things that you have practiced so much that they come naturally to you, or they may have come naturally to you just straight off the bat. But I find that often when I am talking one-on-one with someone, I will hear their stories. And as I'm hearing their stories, I try very much to pause and tell them, hey, I'm hearing this strength, or I'm hearing that strength. Like, are you aware of that strength and how that's playing into the situation you're telling me about? And it's so funny because every time that happens, people kind of pause and they look at me and they're like, well, yeah, I mean, it's a strength of mine, but I really need to talk about this problem. And it's like, well, no, you really need to actually embrace that that is a strength of yours. You really need to acknowledge where the things that you are doing that come easily to you are benefiting your life. Because I think what happens is, you know, the parts of our job that come easy to us, they come easy to us. Like we don't value that about ourselves. The same way as a student, our teacher is so focused on the things that we could improve, we take that along as adults. And so when I am talking to somebody, I really try to like highlight those strengths and really pause and make sure that they start valuing it enough, because strengths can do two things. Like if we undervalue them, then we undervalue ourselves. If we undervalue a strength of ours, then quite literally, like when we go into a job negotiation, or when we ask for a raise, or when we are trying to pitch a new idea, we are not doing it from the strongest possible position. And then also, one of the other things that happens with strengths is they actually lead to interpersonal conflict sometimes, especially in the workplace, because what comes easy to you may not come easy to Bob in accounting. And you're going to get annoyed at him because he doesn't have that strength, instead of looking for the strengths that he has. And so when you can appreciate that your strength is yours and that other people's strengths are equally valuable, because it creates this puzzle that just works together, instead of expecting everyone to have your strengths, then I think that it actually helps reduce friction.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And how many people don't even realize their strengths? They just think it's common and has no value or worth. And really, it's like a massive gift. It just comes so easy to them that they think it's worthless, and they just let people use them, you know, for pennies when they could be getting lots of dollars. So yeah, that's great. Now, what would you say to the person? Well, first off, that was one, know your strengths. What were a couple other things to get people moving?
Mindfulness. I think that really being mindful about what is triggering you, if you are feeling stuck, is really important, because when you are stuck, I find you start snapping at your kids, or you snap at your boss, or maybe you're cranky at work, but you're not necessarily going to snap about the thing that needs to change. You're going to already have been flooded. You're going to already feel stressed. And you snap about something stupid and small. And so I think that it's really important to be mindful about what's going on within yourself, so that you can really be cognizant of where you are stuck in the first place and what is holding you back.
Okay. And then what would you say to the people who don't see value in themselves? Like if you said, hey, you're going to be interviewed, and you're just going to talk about your strong points, And people are like, I don't have any. Like, there's a lot of people who struggle with that.
A lot of people. There are.
So how would you get someone, give us a checklist of our steps. How do you find what you're good at? That's a huge, people wrote books and volumes on this.
I know.
But we're just trying to at least get the catalyst. But
I think I'm going to go to self-compassion. There's a really good quiz. I can send you an email with the quiz that basically is an intake of how self-compassionate you are. Because I think that if you're really stuck about trying to figure out your strengths, if what I've said like resonates, but yet you can't figure out what your strengths are, and say you go and read the Clarity Journal and you're still stuck, then I think that the thing that's probably holding you back is potentially a lack of self-compassion. And there are a lot of really great books about how to build self-compassion. It's not really my specialty. There's also therapy, but I think that someone who is really down in the dumps about what they bring to the world, you know, that's something that you have to tackle first. I think that one of the things that is hard for me is oftentimes I will get someone who just got let go from their job and they'll contact me and they'll be like, okay, now I want to figure out my life purpose. But I can hear the depression in their voice still, like they, you know, being let go, like even if it wasn't for cause, is just such a traumatic experience. Like, this isn't the time to figure out your life purpose, because I mean, we can work on it, but it's not going to be as satisfying as it would have been if you were in a job and we were just moving from one job to the next. Because when you are depressed, when you've gone through trauma, it's really hard to get that energy. And I think it's important to be self-compassionate about that. If you're having a hard time summoning that energy, me just telling you, you need to have it is going to make it worse. Like, you need to actually take concrete steps to find it for yourself or to seek out help to find it.
Yeah, I agree. And sometimes people, they get in the cycle of the depression and they're like, I'm never going to get free, or you know, I don't have the money for a counselor, or you know, I'm not going to a counselor. It's going to mess with my brain. But really, you know, the Bible says iron sharpeneth iron. So the man, a countenance of his friend. If you have a qualified friend or someone who has their act together, there's nothing wrong with talking with a friend like you did. You had friends, you helped, and you came up with this beautiful book, right? The Clarity Journal. So it works, right? But you don't always have to go to a formal counselor. And especially since a lot of those counselors have problems themselves, right? We all have problems, but some are psychos. So I'm going to be honest, like some of the psychologists and psychiatrists are the most screwed up people. So you have to find good ones. That's the key. Then you have to pay for it. So when
I think that one of the key things is to get yourself out of that loop. So if you're talking to friends, you need to talk to the friend that's going to speak the truth. You need to really also get out of your excuses, because it's really easy if you're talking to someone and they give you a suggestion to just make excuses for yourself and like stay stuck. You have to actually be open to having these questions, having the insight to allow yourself to change. And if you're really hell-bent on staying where you are, that's not going to happen, especially without like a good counselor. And you are right, not every therapist is good. And not every therapist is good for every person. I think one of the things that's very hard is, you know, we think, oh, I'm going to go to a professional, but therapy is a lot more like an art than a science. So if it's not a good fit and you've gone to one person and you say, oh, that wasn't for me, it didn't help, well, you don't really know because you only went to one person. So I would really caution or encourage anyone in this situation to really like dig in. Like, your mental health is worth a lot. I mean, it's worth everything. Without mental health, without happiness, what do you have? Like, even if you had $1 million, happiness is everything. So to not give up on yourself.
Yeah, I'd agree. Because if you're mentally upset, you're going to get physically ill. I mean, that's just part of life. And to find the right counselor, like you said, I don't want to spend money to sit in a room with somebody I don't like. You know what I mean? if I'm going to sit in a room with somebody, I want it to be somebody I like or to talk to somebody. So yeah, I think you're spot on. So now we got people looking for their strengths, and then we have people taking that next step and they're saying, okay, I want to do this. You know, I'm mentally getting there, but I just don't see the value inside of me. What do I have to offer the world? Where would you lead those people?
I think if you're still struggling with that, that having someone else tell you your value is really important. Sometimes I have people go back through and look at their if they have good performance reviews, go back and see what your bosses have said in the past. Like, what do people comment on you about? But I think that really, if you can't do it internally, and it is a struggle, even after you've read like a couple self-help books or whatnot, then the next step really is to have somebody try to help you with it, because it's so usually easier for someone else to see it than it is for you if you're depressed.
Yeah, I think that's a good generalization for everything. It's always, not always, but usually easier for other people to see the problem before you do.
Yeah.
All right. So now you have people. They have the clarity journal, they're working through it. What guidance would you have somebody working through the clarity journal? What guidance would you give them to work through the book more effectively?
I'd say expect starting friction. Anytime you're getting started in something new, it is inherently going to be a little harder at the beginning. And so if you expect the starting friction, then you're a little less likely to give up at the first sign that it's not working. And then you can, if you can not give up, but also be somewhat data-driven, making sure that you really are doing the things that need to happen, like that you're not just staying at the beginning, but you're moving forward solidly while being okay with the fact that if you're starting something new, it's going to take longer. Like everything's going to take longer than you think. You think it's going to take you a week to write your resume, it's going to take you 2 weeks. You think it's going to take you 2 weeks to build your website, it's probably going to take you 3 or 4. And to really not beat yourself up over that, because I think that a lot of times when someone's trying to do something new, that's where the hangup comes, is that, you know, maybe they don't have a lot of cheerleaders around them. Maybe, you know, maybe their spouse is kind of like, I'm not sure about this. Maybe their mom is like, you know, that accounting job was really safe and secure. Whatever it is, if you can expect it and normalize it, then I think that it's important. Then I think it helps you move forward. The example I often give is, think about it like in a sitcom. If you see a woman go into labor, you're going to see her water break. And then 30 seconds later, she's going to be in the delivery room. She's going to be like yelling obscenities at her husband for about 2 minutes. And then she's glowing with a baby in her arm. Now, we all intellectually know that process takes a lot longer and isn't actually like made for TV. But yet when we are starting a new project, a lot of times we want it to go like the sitcom or like the Oprah story, but the Oprah story, the Wired story, magazine story or whatever, isn't really getting into the nitty gritty, isn't getting into the messy. And the more that we can expect the messy and normalize the messy, the less we'll beat ourselves up if we hit a little bit of a hiccup.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. Now, saying all that, whether it's personal or professional, what's the top thing that was just devastating you that you had to overcome? Like something you had to face, you had to overcome, but you use these steps to do it. And how did you do it? Because it's not as easy as 1, 2, 3. So what were you facing that was blocking you that you used steps and overcame?
You know, I've never been asked that question, but I actually, now that I think about it, I feel like I used these steps to overcome the physical problems I developed while I was pregnant because they didn't go away after I gave birth. Like they were quite a central part of my life for a couple years after my son was born. And like both being kind and compassionate to myself and also just not giving up and seeing the next person and, you know, getting advice and accepting advice. Because I think one of the things that happens to us, you know, when we've been told that nothing's going to be able to change is that like we become hopeless. And so then if someone else gives us advice, we may dismiss it out of hand. And actually that's what happened to me. Like I had gone to Pilates, I'd gone to a couple different physical therapists and a couple different doctors, and they all helped a bit, but nothing actually stuck. And it was like a final doctor who I wasn't even going to see her about this. I was just like, it was just my annual exam with a new doctor. And she was just really great at asking questions. Like, well, I have this hip issue that I've always like that comes and goes and has been a big pain in the neck. And she's like, oh, and she asked me to describe all of the symptoms. And she's like, well, you need to do these five exercises. I was like, do you know how many physical therapists I've been to, lady? Like, this is not gonna like I don't believe you. And but lo and behold, like it worked. I stopped having those pains, and they do come back every once in a while, but if I go back to those five exercises, it clears it right up. So it's just that like I don't use my muscles quite right, and so sometimes one of my muscles gets weak. And you know, like the not giving up and the continuing to be somewhat hopeful, or even if you have given up and aren't hopeful, still trying advice as you're given it. I think that that's really important.
Excellent. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Never quit, you know, and there's always, I don't know, I think there's a solution to everything out. Every problem out there has a solution. And
Yeah.
worst case scenario, life is average 70, 80 years, and then we got eternity. So we're good there, right? Know God,
Right.
trust Him, you're good to go. But on this earth, man, there's so few things that really don't have solutions. Even if we don't understand it, maybe we can't control it, there are solutions. So I agree with what you're saying, but the main thing is you might as well fight till you die. Don't quit, because that's just an empty existence. I mean,
Right.
that's how I feel. Like, let's fight and die. I'd rather fight and die than live a miserable life.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's do this, Becca. Between your birth and today, is there anything we missed in your life story that you want to share with our community? Small window to cover.
Small window. I really wanted to be an astronaut. If you like asked me when I was 10 what I wanted to do, I wanted to be an astronaut, and I actually saved up all of my babysitting money for multiple years in a row and sent myself to space camp because my parents didn't have the money to send me.
Nice.
So, and then at space camp, the final time I went, I realized there was no way I was going to ever be able to be an astronaut because I get severely motion sick. And that put the kibosh on that.
Well, I'm sure there's other ways you can enjoy that, but it's not your career path. And now you're
It's not
helping
my career.
people. You're helping
Yeah.
people, and you're doing a great job with it. All right. Well, what about where are you today? Where are you today, and where are you heading, Becca? So we as a community, you just helped us, give us great ideas and starting points and tips. How can we help you?
Well, you can check out the Clarity Journal on Amazon. And also, like, even if you're not in the place where you're stuck, I am sure you know someone who is. And passing along the Clarity Journal could be a really good gift to help them start moving through. So maybe they're not complaining to you as much. And like, I just don't know. Like, I think that honestly, you taking the time to really know yourself and listen to yourself and any warning signs so that you continue moving on as strongly as possible, that is the biggest gift you can give to anybody.
Yeah, and we're recording this. It's in December, so it's the holiday season, right? This wasn't going to release until 2022, but every day is a gift. Every day is a day we should be investing in ourselves and others. So if you have the need, buy it. If you have the need through, you see a friend having that need, buy it. It's like a few bucks on Amazon, but it can make a huge difference. And it's not about the money. It's about each other. So check it out. Like I said, I really like it. I started working through it. I really enjoy it. I'm going to continue on. So thank you, Becca, for sending me a copy.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And like our slogan says, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard this about 80 times now. I think we're in episode right around 80, give or take a couple. But don't just listen to this great advice from Becca. Do it. Repeat the good stuff so you can have a great life in this world and eternity to come. So I'm David Pasqualone. This was Becca. And Becca, any final parting thoughts that you want to share with our audience?
Just that you're worth it. And you do actually have a lot of strengths. And the more that you can really acknowledge that you are worth it and come from a place of strength, the better your life's going to go.
Amen to that. On that note, we will close. Thank you for listening today. Check out the past episodes. They're all evergreen. Check out the future episodes. Don't forget all the notes, all the links we talked about with Becca. We'll even put, you said we can get a link to that, the quiz you were saying.
Yeah, mine. It's somebody else's. I will send you the link though.
Yeah, but we'll even put that link in the show notes. We'll put a link to the book on Amazon and check out the show notes. And then if you have any questions, reach out to Becca. If you have any questions for me, reach out to me. We'll do whatever we can do to help you. So I'm David Pasqualone. This was Becca. Thank you, Becca. You're truly a remarkable woman. And to our listeners, have a great day and we'll see you soon. Ciao.
The Remarkable People Podcast. Check it out. Remarkable People Podcast. Listen, do, repeat for life.